And so we have to understand that what we are doing, how we raise our kids at home, is going to play out in the way they live in the world.
I like that. How they practice their voice at home is how they are going to do things when they're out there and when they need it most.
This is a Baby Brunch podcast. This podcast is supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. The range of Epimax Baby and Junior gentle all-purpose emollient moisturizers is an all-day, everyday favorite for babies and children. Give your child a good start to every day by nourishing and protecting their skin with Epimax.
We were actually laughing about the fact that Dr. Jenny Rose, she goes by anything she says, because the truth is she's a mother. And then by profession, she's a clinical psychologist. And it's not the first time that she's on Baby Brunch. And it's not the first time that she's on many other parenting platforms that are supporting parents. And Jenny, I want to thank you for lending your time to people, because we don't pay you bags of money to be here. We actually just make an appointment and you say yes. So I want to thank you for that, because time is a big gift. Thanks for joining us on Baby Brunch again.
Oh, Ilana, thank you for having me. And I love being here. And truly, it is really something I feel so strongly about, that we can really shift these generation of kids that we are raising, and where I can advocate for them and really give a voice to these kids, I am so willing to do it.
Okay, Jenny, I'm going to get straight into this. I did an article on my radio show and it went really, really well. People enjoyed it. And then I went to Facebook and I used the same article on Facebook. We were really struggling to think what we would call this podcast, but the article was called the following. The article said, "Is your tween angry, entitled, and rude? Teenage expert reveals why this is happening earlier than what you might expect." So it outright called our tween rude. In the article, they talked about angry children, door slamming children. I, on my Facebook page, if you want to troll me at Ilana Africa, I was talking about, because I'm a stepmom, I was talking about the fact that when my baby, when Layla's not 21, but when Layla entered her phase of tweens, the one day I said to her, "We don't slam doors, because I will just take it off," you know? So the truth is, in my house, she never displayed the signs of this typical tween that they're talking about, but I'm not her mother. And I know that there is a possibility that both my son and my daughter displayed this with their mom. And now that my own children are entering tween phase, I can see some of this popping up. And you know what was interesting online? Some people online were saying, yeah, we advocate for the fact that they are starting to understand their emotions. And others were actually saying, "Ilana, you are promoting bad behavior, because how can you say that our children are allowed to scream or voice their opinion?" So I found it interesting. I'm not offended at all. And I didn't judge any of those parents, because you know what? Isn't it wonderful that we can parent our own children? So, I mean, let's break it right down. I don't want to touch on the article again, because maybe right at the end we can summarize it. But by definition, what is a tween? Who am I if I'm a tween?
Yeah, so I think when we're talking about tweens, it's an interesting term that's evolved quite recently. And I think the reason we even have a term for it is because we are seeing different behaviors in this group of children. These kids that are preteen, they are not quite yet adolescents. They're not, you know, teenagers that are 13, 14, 15. But they're also not just that middle childhood, quite innocent, quite naive child. And there was this gap or this window of, but what is this child in this period? And that's where the word tween originally came from. And so we're speaking in essence about maybe as early as a 9, but typically 10, 11, 12-year-old. And this is then a time that you can imagine, just thinking about developmentally what they are going through. You are transitioning out of foundation phase of school, out of that very sort of young, your hand gets held a great deal at school, you know, very, very sort of nurturing space into a much more social arena. So there's much more happening dynamically with the friendships. Schoolwork is a little bit more independent and a little bit more testing, but we're not quite yet at 13 where, you know, full on teenage years have hit. So it's really that kind of in-between phase.
There must be some significant things that all of us experience with our tweens. And that's why when moms and dads with children of similar ages get together, we have certain similarities and things that we can talk about. I mean, what stands out? What are some of the, let's call them characteristics or development stages that we can expect now that you have a tween? I'll tell you what's interesting. So more recently, we have a lot of animals. Okay. So we have dogs, and then weekends we go riding at the yard, and we've got horse riding on a Thursday and Friday. So my children have taken the temperature of a horse before by lifting its tail. And, you know, they've seen Christoph, our naughty dog, trying to, you know. And so we got to the zoo the other day, and we saw the most beautiful thing. It's the first time at the zoo that I saw the lion's enclosure that close. We were almost with him. They were lying right against the window, and the male lion climbed on top of the female, and they were lying with their bums towards us. And we happened to be there with another family, and they've never discussed the ins and outs. So the male lion climbs on, and I thought, I'm not going to interrupt this, but I did interrupt it for the other child. I said to her, "Where's mommy?" And she looked away. And my daughter said, "Look, they're making a baby." And the other daughter said, "What are they doing?" And I said, "They're kissing." So I just stopped it for her, you know, because I was like, I have had different discussions with my children as tweens than because developmentally we are all in different stages. And I wanted to share that with you because I haven't told anyone yet. And now I feel really happy about it. It was a beautiful moment. It really was. But what are we experiencing? Are there significant things in a tween's life that we all experiencing that are more or less the same?
Yeah. So I love that you shared that story, because I think that actually is one of the predominant things that starts to emerge in the tween years, is that there is certainly a lot more sort of sexualized content. There's an awakening or an eye-opening to different relationships, into understanding their body, into understanding what happens when you develop, for girls and for boys. And so, you know, this is something that I really advocate for, is that parents should be having these conversations with their kids. If you haven't had this conversation with your tween, now is the time. I know I obviously have also been really intentional about how I talk about this in my own home, and have had many conversations with my kids. But I remember moving to a new school last year for our kids, and they had been in an all-girls school in Cape Town and moved to a co-ed school. And I very quickly realized I needed to be two steps ahead with my conversations, because my daughter was coming home saying, you know, this had come out in the school conversation, or that had come out. And a lot of it was very, very age appropriate. It was a lot in play. So it was just developmentally, you know, boys saying things to other boys. But we need to ensure that these conversations are coming from us as a safe space for our children. It's an incredibly daunting thing for children to learn about their body and the way their bodies are going to change and develop from their peers or from somebody at school. They need to know these things from a trusted space, a safe space, someone that they can ask questions and can really take time to process what they are hearing. So that's the first component that we see in the tween years, is definitely more exploration, more kind of understanding. You know, there are a lot of passing remarks between kids. So a little bit more exposure that I think in the earlier years just goes right over kids' heads. Then what we definitely see in these years is much more of a voice. So suddenly our very compliant little kid has got a very, very strong idea of what they want, and they become very determined and strong-willed, and they are not scared to vocalize or verbalize what they want. And, you know, I know you and I are going to chat in a bit more detail around, you know, are these positive or negative things that we are seeing in these kids? And I really feel like this is such a good thing. And I really try and encourage parents to remember that your child finding their voice, while it might feel like they are challenging you and testing you, is really such a positive thing, because we are teaching children to be able to verbalize what they think and feel and need. And when we look back to our generation and the years before us, how many people were raised to believe that they should shut down what they feel and what they need. And they ultimately push that aside year after year after year. And then it culminates in problems down the line. And so allowing our kids to advocate for themselves and develop a little bit of a voice is such a good and positive thing. And we always are holding it within the frame of respect and, you know, sticking to boundaries in the home environment. But there is certainly this idea of finding their voice. And then the last thing I think that is quite predominant in this time is around control. So we see our tweens really yearning for a little bit more control than what they would have had in previous years. They want a little bit more of a say. They want to have a little bit more of a deciding vote or factor into certain things. And they just want to be able to feel empowered in who they are and what they can maybe bring to the table.
We're looking forward to eventually on this podcast platform do a podcast around discipline and around punishment. Sure. Big word. And it's interesting that you're talking about the voice. More recently now, which my older kids also didn't do, I'm starting to think that my older kids were maybe just really damn scared of me. They haven't displayed any of these. But my younger ones are going, but I'm not done talking. And then I now allow them for the emptieth time to explain the same thing, you know. And the other one that has come up for us is the other day she said to me, no, you can go and watch my sister perform. I'll stay home. I was like, you're nine. You cannot stay at home on your own, you know? So the control thing is interesting. She legit thinks that she can be home at nine. Now, when we were smaller, chances are we did stay at home alone when we were nine. You know, our parents maybe understood a little bit better, or the world was different, you know, and we could stay home at the age of nine. But it's interesting you talk about control. There's lots of challenges that our children experience at school. And I mean, this could be a whole conversation all by itself. I never thought my kids would be submissive to peer pressure, to the point that sometimes she doesn't want to go to school without a jersey because the friends at school don't wear jerseys. So everyone ends up being terribly cold just because the one's not wearing a jersey. So, I mean, even to that level, you know. So I realized that this peer pressure thing is everywhere. It's not just in adult life where your friend's got the new car and you think you need to. By the way, I don't think I need to match up with a new car or a bigger house. I'm quite happy with what I have. But there's so much pressure, even when the goodbyes are different, you know, because the friends' parents don't kiss them as much. So now I shouldn't, apparently. So, I mean, are there things that we need to typically look out for that they experience at this time?
Yeah, I think certainly you've hit the nail on the head with one of the most significant challenges of this time period. And I think it is around the nuance of social relationships at this age is so tricky, because friends suddenly become, judgmental, and there's qualities that determine whether you're accepted or not. It's no longer just you're our friend and come join the friendship group. It's what do you look like, or what can you bring to the table, or, you know, what cool thing do you have? And it is very difficult for them to keep up with this. And so the social dynamics at this age are really, really enormous. And that peer pressure one, you know, I can't tell you how many teenagers and young tweens sit in my office and will say that they have got themselves into huge trouble as a result of peer pressure, despite their parents having numerous conversations with them about this. So often it's not kids that are blind to peer pressure. It's kids that have been told, do not send images of yourself on social media. Do not give in to peer pressure and think you need to vape because everybody else is vaping. Do not go without a jersey because everybody else is going without a jersey. Yet these kids struggle in those moments. And that's what we've got to realize, is it's not just a conversation at home with our kids. It's so much more than that. But we have to be preparing them to be able to have a voice. And the argument is always, we can't have the best of both worlds. We can't expect our children to have no voice in our home and be compliant and, you know, never argue, never stand up for what they think, and then walk into that very peer group and be able to be the only one that stands up and says, actually, I don't like this, or I'm not going to do this, or I'm going to wear my jersey because I'm cold. And so we have to understand that what we are doing, how we raise our kids at home, is going to play out in the way they live in the world.
I like that. How they practice their voice at home is how they are going to do things when they're out there and when they need it most. I would also much rather want to hear what my daughter has to say than not. I value that. I also don't want them telling someone else. I've got a big thing about who do you want to share with? Who do you want to talk? And often I'll go to their dad and go, ah, they told me, you know,
yeah.
And tell you, I win, you know. And in our house, we say Tani, you know, like you're the clinical psychologist. So you'll be the Tani that you talk to.
I'm Tani.
And I know. And I've asked, do you want to go and see the Tani that you talk to, you know, that you can discuss things with? And I was told, no, I want to talk to you. So that for me is, yeah, it is amazing, but it's extremely hard because we are just parents. And I have had to learn that there's a lot of self-work actually in raising children. Isn't that amazing? We get to learn a lot of what you do, Dr. Jenny Rose, in your profession. We get to learn for the first time about ourselves as parents. As parents in psychology.
It's one of the things I love most about this is that when parents come to me, yes, you come for support with your child, and there's loads of things we can do, and we can put various measures in place, and we can treat behavior and sort out behavior. There's a lot. We always have, I say, plan A to Z in options. But what they don't expect that they walk away with is having to have a little look in the mirror and really just reflect on the parent that you are. What do I bring to this relationship? What are my own wounds in the way I was raised? Or what are some of the things that I carry with me that get triggered by my kid? Or how am I showing up in the best way possible? And yes, a lot of parenting is about our children and what they do and how we sort of intervene in their behavior. But there's a very big secondary component, which is self-reflective. And, you know, I often say, if you catch yourself having a strong reaction to a moment, if you, you know, really fall apart and lose your cool completely, which happens to every single one of us, including me, regularly. But when we have those moments, we need to see that it's actually not about the incident. It's then about something that's going on for you personally. And so you are constantly walking this parenting journey alongside an individual journey or process of reflection.
Well, let's reflect on this. Their hormones are out of control. It's probably their brain. I'm reading quotes. This is not my opinion. There's another one. I read a piece that talks about research and the frontal cortex development. And it talks about how for boys, it only really gets developed later on, as late as 25 years old. So here we have a little person, a tween, you know, and all the moms and dads are saying it's their hormones. Look at them. And we call them rude. And remember, respect is earned, not demanded. And you will never speak to me like that ever again. And when you, and if you, I'm going to take away your device. And yes. What else?
Completely unrelated. If children are meant to go to your room.
Yeah. There was a time that I didn't have a room, and I'm sure my mom said something like that, like, go to your room, and it wasn't appropriate.
Wait.
Said, I'll go to my sister's room, okay? What is happening in their teeny tiny, and when I say that, what is happening in our tweens' young brains?
So I think there are two very important physical things that we need to hold in mind. So the first relates to the brain development. And you are spot on to say that they are actually now talking about brain development only finishing around the age of 23, 24, 25. And so they're actually talking about the early 20s as adolescence. It's extended adolescence because they still will often behave in ways that are a reflection of adolescent behavior. So they will be impulsive and sometimes make poor decisions, and all those kind of things that we know is true to adolescence actually can spill over into the early 20s because the brain is not yet developed. And so brain functioning is such an important one, because I feel like when parents can understand brain functioning, it also allows them to have a little bit more compassion, a little bit more understanding into some of the difficult behaviors that you see. We cannot expect young children of the age of 10, 11 to be able to remain emotionally regulated and contained all the time, to not be impulsive, to not get frustrated, because their brain is not yet even developed to be able to do those things. So we are expecting behaviors in children that they do not have the anatomy to actually be able to perform. And so especially when it comes to frontal lobe development, that is one of the last things to be developed much, much, much later down the line. And frontal lobes, the function that they serve is all about executive functioning. So that is our higher order functions, functions that separate us from animals, functions that adults can perform because we have got this area of the brain that is properly developed. But our children do not. So they are going to be impulsive. They are going to be dysregulated. They are not going to have insight into predicting future behavior. They don't have sort of forethought into what might happen. They are not going to have good frustration tolerance because these things in the frontal lobes are not even adequately developed. And so I often use the analogy of the apple, especially for a teenage brain, that the end goal of that brain at maybe 24 is this beautiful, ripe, deep, dark red apple. But what we forget is that for years before, this apple is evolving from a very greeny, yellowy apple to become red. And at many parts in development, you are going to see spurts of little yellow and green on the side, and maybe even a bit orangey, and maybe some red starting to come in. But we are not dealing with a full, deep red apple at all. And that's why there's inconsistency in behavior, because some parts of the brain might be a dark red already, but right over here, we're sitting with a very yellowy picture. And that's why your child is able to make a good, sound, very reasonable decision in one moment. And then a week later, you want to tear your hair out and say, but how did you think that that was a good decision? Or how could you have been so impulsive in the moment? But they do not have the capacity. So that's the first physical thing. The second physical thing relates to hormone development. And what is happening now, which is a major, major thing for kids, is that our onset of puberty happened much later. We have seen the onset of puberty come forward by almost 3 to 4 years in many children. Now, what that means is that when these hormones, the surge of hormones came, you were 4 years down the line in development. You were 4 years down the line in navigating social relationships, in your brain's development. Your frontal lobes have maybe got a little bit more sort of better formed and developing how they should be. All these things have happened because you've had a bit more time to develop. Now, children are being hit with puberty in sort of grade, sometimes even grade 5, grade 6, where social dynamics are often at their peak as well. So you've almost got this double whammy of experience for these kids where they are navigating hormones, they're navigating changes in their body, as well as having to deal with some very difficult things happening in the environment.
But Susan's child is well behaved and she's the same age and she got a badge at school for, what was the badge called? Who knows? You know, when our kids are small, and I say this tongue in cheek, there's sleep training and sleep therapy. Everyone wants this silent, good, sweet child. And now our tweens have words and they have, surely we should send them to a training camp where they can learn to march.
And only, if only there was something that existed.
Wait for a moment there. Is there something that can help us deal with this time a little bit easier. Like I mean, obviously this episode is way too short to even unpack how both you and I as parents, as I almost said lady parents, but as mothers, navigate, like you with your twins and your other baby and me with my four kids, you know. It's almost too short to understand how we are doing it, right and wrong, with different ages and in different homes, in different cities, because each child is so different. Each child is so, so different. And what I find often is that even though I can, and I don't want to rush this tween stage, because my tween, the same one that was so independent yesterday, earlier today at school when I was in the hall busy watching a performance, she sat on my lap. So I really enjoyed that, because all of a sudden my big mouth tween is my small baby, yeah, you know, and I get to hold, I know, reading her book, you know. So I, there's a part of me that doesn't want to speed this up. But what I often find reassuring is that I have a great relationship with my partner. I always say to Ian that we have to be team. So when I know that it was a rocky day with the children, I'll normally find solace in the fact that I can spend time with him, or, you know, I'll turn inwards, like how can I make my day better? Because she feels terrific. She just had a nice screaming session and she feels good, you know, she's already over it. And the only one sulking is mom on the other side, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And sometimes I think we, you know, it really bruises our egos. And I think we parent out of that, out of, you know, this idea that our own ideas of, oh, but children can't challenge and they can't vent what they are feeling. And so when they do, sure, I'm now wounded and I'm going to retaliate with anger or frustration. And that's a big thing we need to look into.
I also just want to say this, and I just clearly remembered this now. I remember when our first children just started grade one and all the mummies are speaking. And then we always go, oh, do they tell you what happens at school? And then the one mom will say, no, I can get nothing out of her, you know?
Yes.
And it is refreshing at times now that they're tweens that we do get to hear how things are, you know? Now when Absolutely. I ask what made you happy and sad at school, and what made you frustrated? What made you angry? Do you want to shout? Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. I do get a response, whereas with grade one, they kind of go, yeah, lunch.
Yeah, it's fun.
What did you eat? Chicken and rice. Did you have fun? I don't remember. I had that too. They can't remember.
Yeah, you know what I think, Lana? It's such an interesting thing, because I think, firstly, what we're doing differently, which I think is really good, is that we are not encouraging kids to be completely compliant at the expense of their voice. So we are not saying you will show up and be in this box, even if that doesn't feel comfortable or right for you. We are teaching them, yes, we need to be respectful, and there are rules at home and at school and everywhere in society that we need to listen to, but we can also develop our own voice. And so I think in years gone by, where people tended to internalize things, they would internalize their anger, their frustration, anything, their sadness, anything they were feeling. I think we are raising kids that are more able to actually get that out in a way. And I think that's such a positive thing. So while it might on the surface look like so-called bad behavior, it's also children not internalizing, not holding onto this thing that they're feeling, allowing it to fester and brew and potentially turn into something a lot more complex down the line. So that's one thing that's really positive. The other thing we need to remember with this age group is, as they are becoming older, they are playing less and less. And for children, they play their experiences, they process through play, they actually regulate emotions through play. So that is why little kids will, you know, act out some really quite entertaining scenes of, you know, how the mommy shouted at them this morning when they were not getting ready in time, and, you know, the teacher did this, and they often play out different dynamics. But as they get older, they don't use imaginative play. They don't use play as a way of really getting rid of frustration and aggression and sadness. And so we have to say, well, where does that go? It's going to come out behaviorally. And hopefully it will come out in a way that is within the relationship, so that we can support them and buffer against it and guide them on a different way. We're helping them to manage their emotions.
Are we expecting too much for them? Like, you know, there's so many rules in parenting. You know, half the time we actually just want to live and enjoy. And only some of us get to that heaven where we enjoy all the moments, you know, and listen to another psychology talk and read another book that we don't finish. And, you know, are we expecting too much from these little people?
Oh, without a doubt. I often just look at what's expected in terms of a school setup. And, you know, even with my own daughter, who is 9, and she's one of those that wants to put her hand up for everything. So she wants to play water polo and tennis and hockey and netball and piano and hip hop. And, you know, the list just goes on, and we are running around from activity to activity.
To activity.
And at some point I have to also draw the line, because it's not appropriate for kids to be doing as much and for us to be expecting as much of them at such a little age. We've also just come out of our first round of exams, which has been quite interesting. But also I really felt so strongly that she didn't need to experience the gravity of what these exams held. She's 9, and it was very important for me that we could study a bit and play, and that even if we didn't finish all the studying, that was not a big deal. And I think we lose sight of it. We think our kids need these perfect 7s on their report, and they need to be in the first sports team of every age group and every sport. And, you know, we have to look back and just say, but these kids are 9 or 10 or 11. And for sure, when they are 16 and they are passionate about a sport and they want to wake up and practice and better themselves, that's a different story. But really, you know, I often say to kids who struggle with pressure, when they come sit in my office, I say to them, how often have you looked at me and gone, oh, I wonder what Jenny got for her grade 4 exams, you know, or did Jenny play first team, whatever? You know, I think we lose sight of, in the big picture, that these things really don't matter. And we get caught up in the pressure. And I think we're putting way too much pressure on our kids in a school environment. I think we put too much pressure on them to behave perfectly. I think we put too much pressure on ourselves to parent perfectly. And I know that I'm someone that advocates for conscious parenting, and I have social media pages. But I also say to parents, you have to just trust your gut a lot of the time. We can't let ourselves be flooded by the influx of information coming at us constantly, yeah. This barrage of information. And we need to be able to go with our intuitive gut response a lot of the time on parenting.
How do we teach them to regulate? I mean, do we? I actually had a breathing session with one of my babies this morning where I said to her, poof, you know, so today happens to be Monday. And I could tell that she would in that moment relate to this. So I often do breathing, especially if I want to cry, you know, because I find that if I hold my breath, then you just don't get to that emotion. You know, it's just always holding your breath. So this morning I could see that Monday had an effect on everyone, even the dog. We were just like, we're over this. You know, the day hasn't even started yet. And we breathed a bit, and I said to her, do you want to cry? And she said, no, but I feel better. So, I mean, in the heat of the moment, do we find something to regulate? Do we teach them to hit a pillow? Do we say, yes, slam the door? Because Ilana's podcast said that we need to allow you to.
Yeah. No. You know, and this is exactly where I think it gets misinterpreted. A lot of people implement conscious parenting incorrectly because they think it means to just allow any emotion and allow our kids to behave in any which way possible. And that's where we're getting it wrong. So that's something I feel really strongly about, is that it's not just about validating the emotions. It's also about putting boundaries in place, because that is a critical part to letting a child feel safe and exist in this world with structure and consistency. But I think, you know, there's definitely an element of what can we do and how can we equip our kids with the skills that they need. And I want to say breathing is a brilliant thing. I love breathing and we use it a lot with kids. But I almost want to bet that part of what made her feel better was actually just that you were there. And we underestimate the role of the relationship as the way to regulate. It's often our presence and not something we do in the moment. And I think we need to also realize that in that moment of meltdown, that there's not really anything we can do then. It's almost too far gone. Like, we actually need to write this moment off. All we are doing there in that moment of dysregulation is containing them. We want to bring them back to a place where they are regulated. So we want to increase or we want to decrease the intensity and decrease the length of that meltdown. That's what our goal is. Our teaching moments happen outside of dysregulation. So when we are developing skills on what to do, breath work, whatever it is, punching a pillow if that works for you, verbalizing, going outside, being in nature, figuring out what works for you, that needs to happen outside of the moment of dysregulation. Because when you're in that state, you can't take anything in. And even if you think about yourself as an just as an adult and as a person, when you're experiencing something hard, you're not able to access what you could do better next time or how you could change the situation there and then. Much later, when you're calmer and you're reflecting and you've got a cup of tea in bed and you can say, okay, it wasn't so smart that I did this, or maybe next time I should try that, or this is what I should have said. It's in our calm moments that we learn the skills to apply in the next moment of dysregulation.
Dr. Jenny, while we are earning the respect of our children and they are receiving ours, what's your wish for our tweens while we are trying to understand them?
I think I hope for them to feel heard and seen. I think it's a very, very tricky and tumultuous time for them where I think they feel a bit lost. I think they feel lost in their friendship groups. I think they feel a bit lost in their role at home. They're no longer the little kids. Maybe there's, you know, other siblings that are younger. I think they feel very easily unseen. You know, they're no longer the cute little ones that everyone laughs at around a dinner table with their sweet mannerisms or whatever they've said. You know, it's often very serious. It's what homework have you done and what is expected of you or demanded of you. I think we lose sight of just them being seen and appreciated for who they are. So my hope is that you see your tween and with all the hardship and struggle that comes, that you actually just recognize and see who they are and enjoy them, you know, just really relish in them. I always think it's something we lose so easily as parents is the joy in parenthood. And it's one of the most fundamental things. So find that joy of being around them and sharing in their company.
And while we are talking about understanding our tweens, just remember that, yeah, we understand you and we definitely see you. Dr. Jenny Rose is a clinical psychologist and you can find her on social media. Also check out our social media post on Baby Brunch to get her details. She's phenomenal. Doctor, thanks for your time today. You're great.
Oh, it's lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
This podcast was supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. Epimax Baby and Junior is dermatologist approved, free of artificial colorants and fragrances, and is safe to use from birth. Touch, nourish, love your child's skin with Epimax Baby and Junior. Available from leading pharmacies and retail stores.